I'm in love, and I'm not gonna hide it. I'm in love, and the object of my love is this next hour we're about to spend together. I'm really going to love this hour, and I hope you will too. Not just hope, though. I'm optimistic that you will love this hour, and probably if you're like me, you'll go back and sometimes listen to this one again from time to time. Hey, I love my guest this week, Bill Burke, fabulous human being, and I'm really in love with our subject this week. He is too, optimism. So buckle up for a joyride through the blue sky boulevards of optimism, only on this week's Rule Breaker Investing.
It's the Rule Breaker Investing Podcast with Motley Fool co-founder David Gardner.
Bill Burke founded the Optimism Institute in 2022 after an extensive media and sports career as an executive writer and producer. Bill served as CEO of the Weather Channel companies after several years at Time Warner and Turner Broadcasting System, where he was the founding general manager of Turner Classic Movies before going on to become president of TBS Superstation. Additionally, whenever I think of TBS Superstation, I think of the Atlanta Braves. But speaking of baseball, for 15 years, Bill was the co-owner and chairman of the Portland Sea Dogs. That's the AA minor league baseball affiliate of the Boston Red Sox. Bill is a lifelong optimist. In his bio on his website, which is largely what I'm cribbing from, he says, yeah, I have to be a lifelong optimist because I'm a Detroit Lions fan. He launched, as I mentioned, the Optimism Institute in 2022 with a mission to inspire people with an optimistic, hopeful vision of the world and its future. I also want to mention, he's a fellow podcaster. I bet you know this already. His is the Blue Sky Podcast, which speaks to leaders, researchers, and thinkers whose stories and insight will remind us, this is Bill's signature line that I love, will remind us that there is always blue sky above. Sometimes you just need to get your head above the clouds to see it. Bill Burke, welcome to Rule Breaker Investing.
It is my great pleasure to join you today, David. Thanks for having me on.
It is a delight. Bill, what led you to create the Optimism Institute?
Well, I had the luxury of my wife and I did a year-long academic fellowship, and it was designed for people at my stage of career to think about what they want to do next with an emphasis on social impact. And we did a three-day sort of deep dive on global mental health. And we talked about some very tough stuff, real challenges. But the gentleman who was leading it left us all with this incredible sense of hope and optimism that we could fix these things. And I started bouncing around in my head. I love to tell stories. I have a media background. And I thought this could be the niche I could fill. I feel like there's an opportunity now to help people who are really suffering from a downward spiral of doom scrolling and pessimism and negativity. It's force-fed us by traditional and social media, but a lot of it's on us. And I felt like this was a niche I could fill. And so I put together the plan. I launched my first podcast with a guest named David Gardner. Yes, you were episode number one.
So honored. Still honored.
Of 2023, I've done 50 plus episodes, one every week, and I've had an incredible time. I'm feeling better already, and I'm getting great feedback, and it's just been a terrific ride so far.
It really has been, Bill, and I know you're not mentioning the university whose leadership institute you graduated from. Is it because it sounds cocky to say Harvard, or are you somehow restricted from doing so?
I am not restricted. I will let you fill that gap. I can say it was a school in Boston. Yeah, Harvard Advanced Leadership Initiative, ALI.
Yeah, and I know how meaningful it was for you. And I assume we're allowed to talk about this, and it'll be edited out by my producer, Dez, if we're not. But it's March Madness time of year. Did you have a classmate who is a March Madness figure for those of us who are big fans?
I did. Gus Johnson.
Gus Johnson!
The man was in my class. And yes, and he continued to, he was traveling the world while he joined us. Fantastic guy. Also a native Detroiter, by the way. We bonded over Michigan and Detroit sports. Fabulous human being and a great sports guy.
Yeah. Sounds like he's as great off the mic as he is indeed great on the mic.
One of those guys you absolutely want to root for.
Love it. So, Bill, was there a moment where you switched on? Was there, I don't know, the skies part and open and you saw a blue sky above? Or did this really kind of come to you? It's not even just that one year at Harvard. I mean, you are a lifelong optimist. You are a fellow clicker of internet things. You also, if you're like me, you're hardwired to experience the pain of loss.
Yes.
At roughly three times the rate that the joy of gain gives us as human beings. There's lots of reasons that you're a contrarian, basically, by being an optimist today. Let's go back much earlier in your personal journey. Were you always like a happy kid?
It's a funny question. I've thought a lot about it because people wonder. And I was definitely a happy kid. I'm the youngest of four. I had a very privileged upbringing, two-parent household. We were comfortable. My parents were very frugal. My parents, if there's anything they imparted on me, it was a sense of gratitude for everything. And I think there is a very tight connection between gratitude and optimism. My mother in particular is a very optimistic person. If you said, boy, it's crummy weather today, she said, yeah, it's going to be nice tomorrow. She just was that kind of person. And it's funny with my mom, my father since passed away, but my mom's still alive. And we were moving her recently into assisted living, going through her stuff. And I, for whatever reason, do not have a copy of my senior yearbook from high school, but she did. Huh. So I want to go down memory lane. And I flipped to that section where we voted on, most likely to succeed and the class clown, whatever. And then, cross my heart, class optimist, myself and a young woman named Moira. If you're out there, Moira, we were class. I have no memory of that.
Love it.
Picture the two of us with our thumbs up. So that, I'll age myself. That was 40 years ago that I was voted class optimist. So there's been something there for a while.
It really does so often. I'm sure it's genetic in part. I mean, I always think of life as about half genetic and half behavioral. But the family in which you grew up, Bill, and I'm sure the schools that you went, I'm sure the success that you had. Anybody who at the end of high school is judged most likely to be successful, biggest optimist, all of those things. Generally, those are pretty predictive, by the way. I subscribe to this notion that life is like high school. It sounds like it has been for you. I do want to mention, as you describe your mother and her reaction to the weather, I was reminded of a great chapter in the book, Three Men in a Boat by Jerome K. Jerome. Have you ever read this book, Phil?
I have not.
And you don't need to, but it's very funny, and it was written right around the year 1900. And basically, they're three men are taking a trip down the Thames. And it's this rollicking kind of who do they bump into novel. It's purely humorous. Jerome. That was his name. His parents named, the Jerome family named their son Jerome. Anyway, so they come upon an old man. And the question is, is it going to rain this afternoon? Because it's the morning, they're out on Thames. And the author goes into his theory about this, how to answer the question. And the answer is always, no, it's not going, it's going to be a beautiful afternoon. And you already know this, and your mother clearly knows this, but just to spell it out for our listeners, if you say it's going to rain, and then it does, people always shoot the messenger. You're like the doomsayer. People think about you, God, that angry old man who told us it's going to rain, he was right, and you don't like that person. If he says it's going to rain and he's wrong, then you're like, huh, you remember that knucklehead that we encountered who told us it's going to rain? So, and then if you're right and it's beautiful, people love you. If you're wrong and it's beautiful, they're still like, oh, I mean, what a great old, that old man, that lovely old man who said it was going to be nice.
You just described what it's like to work at the Weather Channel.
I wasn't even connecting those things, but
you're like a ref in a sporting event. Nobody notices you until you're wrong. You never get credit for being right. The weather people say, oh, it's the only place you can make a living if you're wrong half the time. It's not true. No one. When you say it's going to be fair in 75 and then it is, no one says, wow, they really nailed it. They only pounce when you make a mistake.
It is so true. And
it brought me back.
I understand. How long were you at the Weather Channel companies?
I was there for 2 years. And it was a formative experience because it is a fascinating business and much tougher than it looks, but they are much better than they get credit for. So that's my 2 cents.
So yeah, you ask you or me, I'm happy. But what about other people? No, they're not happy. That feels like a misconception. Bill, what are some other common misconceptions around optimism? Martin Triggs, who wrote in on Twitter in advance of this podcast, knowing that you were joining with me, he said, I hope, would Bill describe a little bit discuss the difference between optimism and hope?
Sure. So other misconceptions, and you and I both also had Kevin Kelly on our show. And one of the things I bristle at, and it's actually one of the reasons I did this work, and the seed was planted in 2016. So in November 2016, Donald Trump was elected president. That was a great day for a lot of people. That was a very tough day for a lot of people. And I remembered, and I went back to check, there were at least two major editorials at the end of 2016 that declared 2016 the worst year in American history. And I love history. And I thought to myself, really?
Yeah.
1863 was kind of grim. The Depression was pretty rough. And I thought we've lost perspective. So I think one of the huge misperceptions is around history. And I mentioned Kevin Kelly because in his book, Excellent Advice I Wish I'd Had When I Was Younger, is one of my favorite lines, which is roughly, if you only read the news, you'll think things have never been worse. But if you read history, you realize things have never been better. And I don't think you can sum it up any better than that. And so I think if we have a healthier understanding of history, we'll get this better. The difference between hope and optimism, it's funny because when I started this work, I did a deep dive on this, and you can get so many different opinions. The one I like the best is optimists assume that the odds are in their favor. To have hope, you usually have hope at times when the odds are probably not in your favor, but you're hanging on with hope. So an example I like to give, and I pardon the sports analogies.
You do not have to pardon them on this podcast.
On this podcast, this is a sports crowd. So, okay. So my Detroit Lions, they are one of four franchises that have never appeared in the Super Bowl. Without Googling, if your listeners can come up with the other three, good for them. But they're one of the four. They came within 17 points, halftime lead of making it this year. But anyway, I am optimistic that someday they are going to make the Super Bowl. The odds are in my favor over time. Now, if they have the ball in a specific game with 1 second left on their own 20-yard line and they're down by 10 points, I have no optimism that they're going to win. In fact, at that point, I don't even have hope, okay? It's not going to happen. It just mathematically can't happen. However, if my Detroit Tigers are down even 10 runs with instead of 1 second with three outs left,
yeah,
I'm not overly optimistic, but I still have hope. And I actually have been thinking about this. I don't want to get too far afield here, but I think it's one of the reasons that baseball has this sort of mythology around it. There's always hope in baseball. There's no clock.
That's a good point.
Even with a pitch clock, there's still, until that last out, there's always hope. And in almost every other sport, if your basketball team's down by 12 with 3.3 seconds left, it's over. But if so there's three outs left, it's never over. You always have hope.
So part of what you're sharing, Bill, is that the clock, Father Time, as has been said,
yes,
reigns over most sports.
Yes.
Baseball is not one of them, though.
Exactly.
Cricket is also not one of them. But yes, most sports, I guess tennis. Tennis is not one of them.
Yep.
Some of our favorite sports don't have a clock ticking down to zero. Always hope. You know, Yavuz Majun, who's one of our fans and regular listeners of this show, said, we know intuitively that optimism is good for us, but is there any scientific data? Do we have tangible proof? Yavuz went on, there's a lot of quantum theory behind some explanations about positivity and optimism, but what are Bill's thoughts on that, the science of optimism?
Yeah, so I am the farthest thing from a scientist, but I've read a lot about it. And there actually is, I really don't know how they do this research, but I have in front of me a Harvard Health report where they measure optimism. They show that optimism and cardiac patients, you're like 15% less likely to have cardiac issues if you maintain an optimistic outlook. Mental health, I think it goes without saying that maintaining a positive outlook will improve your mental health. There's been research done on survival. I actually have a gentleman I'm going to be interviewing this summer who was a 5.5-year POW in Vietnam, and they have done sort of post-war PTSD studies, and that those POWs who maintained a sense of optimism while they were captured and after they got out had much longer rates of survival coming out. I've seen there's a story that Admiral Stockdale, I think, told, and this might be in the hope optimism thing. He said that actually people who were overly optimistic as POWs, who said to themselves, well, surely we'll be out by Christmas. And then another Christmas came. And they said, well, surely we'll be out by next Christmas. Another Christmas came. They actually kind of cratered. And he described that as sort of unrealistic. Maybe that's toxic optimism. I don't know. But they maintained hope. The survivors always maintained hope. So there's very tangible, there's even a study that suggests that people with an optimistic outlook live 15 to 30% longer lives. Mm. Again, I don't know how you do that research, but I've seen it more than once. I think it's true. So it's, in some ways, it's a selfish position to take. You're going to feel better. You're going to live longer. You're going to be healthier if you're optimistic.
And neither of us is a scientist, and we don't play them on television or podcasts. Yeah. We do sometimes have them on our podcast, yes. And you've done wonderfully with that, Bill. In fact, let me just break out for a quick second, talk blue sky with you, and then we're going to go back to science. But you've done 50-plus podcasts now, present company accepted, firmly so. If I wanted to listen to Blue Sky, one or two of them that would jump out to me and be memorable or meaningful. I know you love all your children. Every week we love what we do. But if I'm a listener just encountering Bill Berg for the first time, what's the Blue Sky podcast I should listen to on my next jog?
Well, I think on this subject we just talked about, I interviewed a gentleman named Richard Davidson. He goes by Richie, and he is a neuroscientist at the University of Wisconsin, a lovely human being. I actually found him on the 10% Happier podcast. And he is a guy who, as a neuroscientist back, I think in the 70s, early 80s, like most neuroscientists, he was studying all the things that go wrong with the brain, right? Depression, all these other issues, things that go wrong. Well, he travels over and he meets with the Dalai Lama, and His Holiness says, why don't you treat people who have healthy brains? Why don't you help people learn from those who have healthy brains? He turned his career around, and he has since been a studier of just that. And he embraces, as have others on my show, this idea of brain plasticity. It is a huge learning. You mentioned earlier, David, that we're probably born a certain amount of optimism or pessimism. Absolutely. But increasingly, just as you can go to the gym and make your biceps bigger, you can work on the plasticity of your brain and literally rewire your brain based on what you feed it, what you think. Do you meditate? Do you not? Our brains are way more plastic and changeable than we ever thought. And it's really revolutionized that field of medicine. So Richie Davidson, I think for me, would be that one.
Awesome. Richie Davidson, Blue Sky Podcast. Google it, fellow fools. Enjoy and learn. And so we're going to stick on science a little bit longer, even though Richie isn't with us. But what I'm thinking, Bill, is that while I can't speak to the brain itself and how we decide, and I know there's the fast part of our brain and the slow part of our brain, and I've read some of these things, but I'm not studied up. But what I think I've figured out, and you've helped, and let's work on this together a little bit, is I think optimism is actually causative. It's actually determinative. Like, it is a creative force. It's not just a state of mind. It leads us, in some cases, to take risks in a good way. I think not a crazy way, I hope. But to when you believe something, it's more likely to happen. I think these things are fundamentally true, and therefore, while it's often referred to as a state of mind, I think the reason people, you just quoted it, live longer, live happier, all of these things are because of that plasticity of our brain. I don't know if you've come across Shirzad Shamin and his work on positive intelligence.
Yes.
So this is also where I've encountered that, and we've had him on this podcast. And so I'm very persuaded that the brain is plastic. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And therefore, if we believe, we're much more likely to get the thing that we believe in than if we don't believe.
Totally. 100%. I mean, the late General Colin Powell said, optimism is a force multiplier. He believed it in running his, you know, the folks who reported to him. General Eisenhower said, pessimism never won a battle. And our mutual friend, Bert Jacobs, says, I always challenge people, show me the list of history's great pessimists.
Life is good, Bert Jacobs, co-founder and a CEO.
It's a great line. And it's something I've worked on, David, that has been, it's really been transformative for me. The nature of the work I'm doing, by definition, I am looking for these stories, these positive stories. And so I'm now living in New York City, and you walk a lot in New York. It's an interesting thing. You're rarely in cars or in the subway. You're surrounded by people all the time, right? And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are buried in their phones as they walk. I've made a point. I don't have pods in. I am looking around.
You were the guy, the one guy without a phone and without AirPods.
I am that guy, David. And I have my head on a swivel, and I am looking for goodness. And it's everywhere. Whether it's the person who dropped their grocery bag in the middle of the street and five people jump to help. Whether it's the stranger who says, can I pet your dog? You know, all these things. The police officers giving directions to lost tourists. It's everywhere. And so if you're, you know, armed with a hammer, there's a lot of just good nails out there that instead, if you're looking for the worst, you're going to find that too. But I think the vast majority of things you're going to see are positive.
And then, therefore, in my mind, and we've talked about this, I think we agree on this, it becomes causative.
Totally. I am more pleasant to be around. You can ask my wife. I feel better. You know, and I was talking to someone, we haven't talked about politics, but for good reason. But I talked to someone the other day. We allow ourselves to wallow in some of this negativity too. It's like we get in, instead of, we touch the burning stove and we leave our hand there. And so I was talking to a friend. I won't name the politician, but did you hear what candidate X said? Can you believe what he said? I said, what did candidate X say yesterday? Is that going to change your behavior in November? She's like, what do you mean? Is it going to change who you voted for? No, I would never vote for him. So why are you letting him now ruin your day? Why are you wallowing in that? You know who you're voting for. You're never going to change your mind. Don't wallow in the ridiculousness of this person you don't like. It's a real trap, and we're allowing it to happen to ourselves, in my opinion. Yeah.
And it's a reminder that who we surround ourselves with is also going to be so determinative, so causative in our life. It sounds like your wife is increasingly lucky to have married you, and you keep becoming a better and better person to be around, Bill. That's why I'm glad I'm hanging out with you this week. This is what I believe. Fight me. But I really do think, and we've talked about this many times before in Rule Breaker Investing, keeping good company makes a huge difference. We're all influencing each other actually out to a third concentric circle that we can't even see, and it matters so deeply. So even if you can't, I guess, dear listener, be an optimist, by the way, nobody should force it, but even if you can't, hang out with them.
Totally. No, I mean, think about it. You're invited to a dinner party, and there's assigned seating. And who do you want to sit next to for the next hour? You want to sit next to someone who's going to complain about candidate X for the next hour? Or do you want to, you know, do you want to sit next to Eeyore or, I don't know, Pooh or Piglet? Tigger might get on your nerves after now. But do you know what I mean? It's just we feed off the energy of other people. And, you know, there are some people who I think enjoy wallowing in it, but I think they're few and far between. It really is who you want to surround yourselves by.
Speaking of surrounding ourselves with good company and learning, Bill, you earlier spoke to that habit you have of walking around New York City. By the way, is New York City an optimistic place?
I think it's way more optimistic than people realize. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. No, I do think, you know what part of it is? New York continues to be a city of immigrants. And I will fall on my sword and say that immigrants are in many ways the ultimate optimists.
Love that.
Think about where they're coming from, where they're going to. I was in the car the other day, an Uber driver, and I always say, so where are you from originally? And he said, Korea. I said, oh, my father fought in the Korean War. He said, what a valorous thing to do. He said, this country's incredible. I love this. This is the best country in the world. I thought to myself, when was the last time you heard a native-born American? Now, we can argue whether or not it's the greatest country in the world. Fine. But boy, it was the positive energy coming off this guy driving an Uber from Korea was incredible. So I think that has a lot to do with it in a place like New York.
A superlative point about immigration and immigrants. I really appreciate that. Thank you, Bill. Be practical with us. You've already done this, but be a little bit more practical with us. Tips, strategies for cultivating optimism in my daily life. I now know that I can take my head out of my phone and maybe not have my AirPods on and look around and look for good stuff. Are there daily things that you do or
yes.
People you've interviewed, strategies?
Yes. Gratitude is one. And there are books written about gratitude. You can do a gratitude journal. You can do these other things. Richie Davidson, back to him. He challenges people. He said, do this for a week. Pick one meal a day. And before you eat, look at your plate and be grateful for how that food got to your plate. Whether that was the checkout person at Whole Foods or the farmer who raised the chicken or the truck driver who drove the corn here from Iowa, all of those take you 2-3 minutes. He said, I guarantee you by a week, you're going to feel better about life if you simply do that. Very simple thing. And on phones, it's to me, it's not just putting down the phone. It's also Who are you following? Why are you following them? Clean up your feeds. I made a conscious effort to do that. You vote with your likes. And just as the algorithms can spin you down into doom, they can spin you the other way as well. I've seen it. And it's a real thing. And so I encourage people. I also am not a big fan of news alerts. Rarely is a news alert good news. It's usually awful news. And 9 times out of 10, it's nothing you can do anything about, right? So there's just been this tragedy across the world, and it's a terrible thing, and it's sad. I don't need to know about it right now.
Such a good point.
Nothing I can do about it. It's so those I think are the basic ones. And then, you know, every once in a while, my wife and I will sit down, we'll start watching a movie, and it's like, this isn't very pleasant. There's other things we could be watching. You know, life's short. I just think a lot of what you put into your brain we're the gatekeepers. And so we can blame Facebook and Instagram and those folks. And I have some questions about their business practices, but a lot of it's on us. These are unforced errors, to use another sports term.
I'm not asking you to be Mr. Optimistic all the time. I don't think that's fair to you or anybody else. I know any optimist, I hope, is also a realist. Otherwise, it's pie in the sky,
yes,
wet behind the ears, happy-go-lucky. We might talk about that a little bit later, but we're about to ask you for a streaming recommendation. We're going to go to the what's the show we should be watching. And you don't have to say the one that's the most optimistic.
Everyone's going to say Ted Lasso, so I'm not going to say that.
Don't say that. What are you going to say, though, Bill? And it doesn't even have to be to help my optimism. Just what's a good show?
Oh, well, this is really hokey, but it's on the PBS app. It's free. All Creatures Great and Small.
Fantastic.
Did you ever read those books?
I read the first one. My wife read all of them.
They're fantastic. The show is delightful. It's just a total getaway. You feel great. Love it. I love documentaries. I'm about to watch the Steve Martin documentary that I've heard great things about. Paul Simon. I am a huge fan of making ofs, behind the scenes. If you show me how someone created something incredible, I will eat. You know, and it's gone viral. Watching Paul McCartney write Get Back in real time from the Beatles documentary. If you haven't seen it, Google Paul McCartney writing Get Back. He's just jamming around on his guitar. And then all of a sudden, Ringo starts playing the drum. And all of a sudden, he writes Get Back before your eyes. It's Peter Jackson.
I hadn't seen that.
Drop everything. So those I love. I think the creative process makes me optimistic. When I want to feel better about my fellow humans, I watch some great piece of art, some music. If you've seen Hamilton and that doesn't make you feel better about the human species, then I think there's something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as you were, first of all, thank you for every one of those. I love it. And you were reminding me that I'm talking to a media executive. Most of Bill Berg's life, he was running media companies and tightly partnered with Ted Turner. Is Ted Turner an optimist?
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. And right there with immigrants, entrepreneurs. You cannot be an entrepreneur unless you're an optimist. Think about it. You think you have this idea that's going to make the world better. I mean, that's by definition, you're an optimist. So absolutely. And I was lucky. I worked for him. And then in this crazy set of circumstances, he asked me to be his ghostwriter. So I wrote his autobiography. So not only did I get to see him in action as my boss's boss and this incredible entrepreneur, but then getting, you know, up close and personal. I've done yoga with Ted. And let's just say his shorts didn't fit as well as they should have. I'm going to leave it right there. He is the ultimate optimist. And when things were down, one of the things I learned from Ted was not only is he a great winner, he was an incredible loser. If you play the game enough, you're going to lose a lot. He owned the Atlanta Braves when they were losing 100 games a year, right? But he stayed at it. And one of his lines was, I'm not losing. I'm just learning how to win. And, you know, when he was a racer, people forget, he was the world's greatest ocean racer. He was terrible when he started. When he was a kid, they called him Turnover Ted, Ted Turner. He was capsizing all the time. But he said, I'm not losing. I'm just learning how to win.
Well, you just mentioned entrepreneurs. Let's stick with that for a little while, Bill Berk. Leadership, organizations. Discuss the role of optimism in leadership and its impact on the culture of the organization.
I think it's right there at the very top of attributes that leaders need to have is optimism. I think integrity is right there. And maybe there's a connection between those two. Warren Buffett says, energy, intelligence, and integrity and integrity is the most important, because you're out if the other two can kill you. And so I think, you know, in leadership roles, and I've read about others, there's an incredible story about Eisenhower when he's addressing the troops at D-Day. And there it's, you know, he knows, best case, this is going to be a terrible day. You know, and a lot of these guys aren't going to make it. But if they see in him any doubt, any pessimism, then the mission can't be fulfilled. And so you said before, you have to be realistic, but you have to paint an optimistic, exciting future. People, you're, as a leader, you're trying to lead people into a future, and that has to be an optimistic future. So,
especially when you remember that that's going to be causative.
Totally. I mean, a man on the moon by the end of the century, talk about the minute that was said, it was like, whoa, okay. And it was a BHAG, it was measurable, it was all those things, right? Yeah, so I think again, back to Burt Jacobs, show me the list of history's great pessimists. Who wants to follow a pessimist?
And again, a lot of people will know Burt, but for those who don't, he's the founder of Life is Good, that brand, t-shirts, bumper stickers. It's just they're selling optimism.
He's putting an edge to it. We corresponded the other day, and he's sending me a t-shirt. He's got a new one. And the one I'm getting as an alligator, and it says, gather the optimists, eat the pessimists. He said, we need to give optimists a little bit more of an edge. But I will be wearing that proudly.
Walking around the streets of New York, I would like to see the video.
Eat the pessimists.
So we are now getting to know Bill Burke, and I have had the pleasure of knowing Bill not every year, but for 20 plus years. And I'm just so glad to be reconnecting in this powerful way for me, really, since you started the Institute a couple of years ago. It just means so much to me, Bill, your work, and I've enjoyed the Blue Sky podcast. Let's keep talking. You know, Ted Turner, there are other leaders, other companies that you can think of that are examples for us of embodying optimism effectively. Who else among, let's stick with CEOs or business leaders or brands or companies that jump out to you?
Well, you know, with Ted Turner, and I'll have a media bias. I mean, Walt Disney, in every which way, that the man, Walt Disney, embodied that. And when you think about the creativity it took to envision Disneyland and then Disney World and literally creating new worlds, new environments, the first feature animated film, Snow White, I mean, incredible. And so, there were hiccups after he passed away, and there was a lot of standing around and what would Walt do? And that's a challenge with a figurehead entrepreneur like that. But I think there are so many tailwinds behind whoever is running that company that were started way back in the DNA of a guy like Walt Disney. So he's one who comes to mind.
Bill, are you keeping up with Disney right now in some proxy wars? Do you have any dog in this fight?
I do not. I am a passive. I'm still an investor, a holder.
I am too. And if you're like me, you're getting spam calls. You're getting people who say you need to vote this or that way. You're getting texts.
Yeah, I stay out of that. The life's too short for me to get too involved in that. I will tell you, the media business that I worked in is, I barely recognize the industry now. It has changed so profoundly. It is so hard to run these companies now. I was talking to a friend the other day about the traditional box office business and how that's changed. And he was telling me that the business deal behind the Roadhouse movie that Amazon has put out, I know you're an Amazon guy. So Amazon, as I hear the story, they said, we want to make Roadhouse. Director says, I want it in theaters. Directors still have this thing. It's got to be in theaters. It's not a movie. If it's not in theaters. It's got to be in theaters. Well, we want the right to just go straight to streaming. Well, I want it in theaters. He said, okay, here's the deal. The movie has a $60 million budget if we put it in theaters. As an $80 million budget if you give us the freedom to go straight to streaming.
Wow.
The director said, I'll go with a higher budget.
Yeah.
They went straight to streaming.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how you do the math to decide that movie is worth $80 million to Amazon straight to streaming. You know, you can quantify it in theaters, but I'm sure a quick math, if you don't have to add a lot of Prime subscribers with a tentpole movie to make, I don't know. I'm fascinated by that math, but it's an industry I barely recognize anymore. I still love it. But it's changed an awful lot.
So if we're building Bill Burke's Mount Rushmore of optimists in business, Ted Turner is obviously there. And I think he, even though you have a close personal association, you helped him write his book, I still think he stands large enough, he looms large, that he deserves a spot regardless of your relationship with him. And Walt Disney, I get you. Do you want to pin two other people up there?
Wow, that's a good one. Boy, on the spot. I think Sam Walton, it's hard not to put him up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can get into discussions about personalities and lifestyles and everything else, but what Jeff Bezos has created,
yeah,
I mean, it's just...
He's a huge optimist.
I mean, and one business category after another. I just told a box office story. If you told me 10 years ago we'd be talking about Amazon's theatrical strategy, I mean, come on. I was the guy, I love books. I first heard about Amazon because a guy on a bus had an Amazon bookmark, paper bookmark. I said, well, what's Amazon? It's the world's largest online bookstore. Cool. I'll buy books from Amazon, but I'll never buy anything else from Amazon. I'll just buy books. Fast forward, I'm buying everything from Amazon now, but books.
Yeah.
I'm going to my local bookstore, and I do use my Kindle. But
yeah,
unbelievable what they have created.
Very well done. Bill, let's go to the dark side briefly. There are people listening who are saying, yeah, you know, I've heard this stuff before, optimists. And I'm not saying this person, by the way, is a pessimist. Yeah, we're creating a straw man with this question. So, Bill, what are three common criticisms, challenges,
sure,
leveled at someone like you from people who feel like they've seen this before?
Sure.
You're just promoting optimism, but that's not the way the world works. Three common criticisms. I want you to take them down.
Oh, let's go. The first one is actually personal. It's like, of course you're an optimist. You grew up with privilege. You're living well. You've got it made. And I'm very self-conscious about that. I will say I've had challenges that I don't publicize. It hasn't always been easy. My dad was really tough, you know, so there's this, but I get that. Of course, it's easy for you to say. That's one. Another is, that's pie in the sky. That's passive. I actually don't like, is the glass half full, half empty? I don't think that's a measure of optimism. That's some sort of weird positivity thing. I think an optimist says, yeah, it's half full. I'm going to chug it and I'm going to go fill it up and have another. that's an optimist.
As somebody holding literally a glass of kombucha in my hand as we talk,
yeah,
I notice it's actually half. I'm not going to say, I'm just going to say it's half.
Others say it's full. It's just half liquid, half oxygen and air.
Good point.
But that's one that is just, you're sitting back, that optimists are passive. And then I guess the third is that optimists are naive. It's like, wake up, Bill, look around you. The world is on fire. We have never been more divided. We have never, you know. And with that, I just try to counter with historical facts and, you know, the Steven Pinker presentations.
Yeah.
The other, though, I will say, and I've had my moments, there are people right now who are in dire, awful situations with their own health, with the health of others, with in war-torn zones. I am very sympathetic to that. Obviously, there are people in parts of the world who are struggling terribly. So I get that, and that is a very fair criticism. When you look at numbers on a whole, absolutely the world was better today than it's ever been.
And I really appreciate your point about looking at newspapers versus looking at history that you made earlier. Another listener question coming in this week from Craig Hawkins at Craig's Brain on Twitter. I'd love to hear Bill comment about being optimistic in difficult situations. So Bill, you just shared examples. Let's take a protracted illness or mental health challenge, broken relationship, that sort of thing.
Sure.
How do you be optimistic in those situations?
Yeah, it's really tough. And I'll get personal here. I lost a niece to cancer. She was 29 years old, very close to me, my sister's oldest, just an incredible human being. Mm. And it was leukemia. It was two bone marrow transplants. And after the second one, back to the difference between hope and optimism, the odds start spinning against you, and it's more hope, frankly, than optimism. And it was brutal, and it was very hard to stay positive. And she helped a lot because she was one of those people who never, you'd say, how you doing, Annie? And she'd say, how are you, Uncle Bill? No self-pity, but it was brutal. It was very hard. One thing I would say, and I had a guest on an episode I was just editing, it's about to come out. He said, time is a great medicine. And so I was at the depths after she passed away. It was late 2019. But then slowly by slowly, when you get to the other side, at least in my case, things change. I am so much more empathetic. I am so much more sympathetic to people going through cancer. I used to watch the Jimmy Fun telethon during the Red Sox game and say, enough already. Can we get back to the game? And now it's a game changer for me. I am a better person. I wish that didn't happen. I wish Annie was still with us, but I'm a better person today than I was before that happened. So, that much easier for me to say than for my sister and her husband, but that's an example, but it was really hard. And again, there was probably a shift to more hope than optimism as the odds started to turn, but it's a really tough thing. But to remember that, it's a trite expression, but this too shall pass. Time is great medicine. And what's the alternative? When it gets that bad, if you don't have some optimism, you don't have hope, why would you even get out of bed? So to me, it's one of the few things that can motivate you when things are at their worst.
Well, Bill, at a few different points, I've mentioned some listener questions.
Yes.
Our tweeting friends, and we have many of them. I enjoy following you, Bill, on Twitter. You are, now this is a little hard for me. I think you're at W.A. Burke, is it 2706?
8206. It's a long
8206.
Story. My kids are like, they're like, you can't have your name on there. You got to. And my name's William Andrew Burke, so that's embarrassing. But yes, that is it.
But at Opt Institute works for
Go there. Yeah. Go there.
All right. Well, we have a lot of Twitter fans and friends, and a few of them wrote in. And I'm going to share a question from Jason Moore. And I like this one a lot. So Jason actually shared a few. We might go into a couple of these. One of them is, what role does personal responsibility play in fostering optimism?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it plays a big role. And I think it plays a role in, again, how we live our lives day to day. What are we attracted to? What do we read? What do we put in our brain? What do we follow online? How much time are we spending on our phone? How much time are we reading history versus reading the news?
Yeah, these are all choices.
They're all choices. David, one of the things that happened after not that many episodes, yours included, I started seeing threads and connections between people I interviewed. And one of them was, they all, in some way, sort of described themselves as lifelong learners. I thought, well, what does that have to do with optimism? And then recently I had Kelly Corrigan on the show, who's a great writer. She's a host on PBS, a great podcast. And I said that to her. She goes, what's an optimistic position to take? There's always more to learn. There's always more to know. There's always more to read. That's inherently optimistic. So in terms of our personal behavior, you're going to plop yourself in front of the TV and watch people scream at each other on the cable news shows. You're going to read a book about the challenges that Irish immigrants had coming to the United States. I just finished a great book called Plentiful Country. It's about the potato famine and Irish immigration in New York. You think we have it tough now?
Yeah.
Just the boat ride.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. Such a good point. We need to be reminded.
How you spend your days is how you spend your life, right? So
love it. One more Jason Moore question at Jiminy Jillikers, Jason. What key factors contribute to a flourishing society? How do we amplify those things and promote growth and well-being? This is a big question.
That's a big question. Yeah.
I didn't prepare you for this one. I don't send my questions ahead of time to my guests. I'm not polite that way.
That's a great. What was the handle?
At Jiminy Jillikers.
So
one of the better Twitter handles.
So jealous. That's a good one. I think we, unfortunately, have gotten ourselves into a situation where our society thrives on tearing each other down. Who can yell the loudest? Who can have the wittiest cut down, put down, insult, cancel, all that stuff? And it's really unhealthy. And societies aren't going to flourish when we just assume the worst. I was listening to Brian Stevenson recently, who's a personal hero of mine, wrote Just Mercy. He's the incredible attorney. And he said, we're in a society where we reward people for the witty put down. And he's like, we got to get past that. We're not going to flourish as a society. And I agree that 100%. And the ultimate playground for that is the internet. People hide safely in their basements and hurl insults at others. It's really not healthy. So I think that's a big one. We got to try to pull ourselves out of that.
Good goal. Bill, let's play buy, sell, or hold.
Go.
You have generously agreed to play my game with me. Thank you.
Biggest mistake ever made. But
this will only hurt a little while.
Let's do this.
So ahead of time, you don't know what's coming. These are not stocks. But if they were stocks, would you be buying, selling, or holding? And a few sentences, a thought or two as to why. You ready?
Yes.
Let's kick it off with meteorologists. You mentioned them earlier. Buy, sell, or hold meteorologists.
Buy.
Why?
Technology continues to improve and advance. AI is being brought to weather forecasting. Weather forecasting is so much better than it's ever been. It's so much better than people give credit for. Buy, buy, buy.
I will. I like that point. I didn't really think about, I mean, is AI eventually going to enable us to know what the weather will be at that zip code at that hour in future?
Well, they come pretty darn close now. Get on weather.com and do your zip code. I'm telling you, no one says, gee, they really nailed it with 74 and fair.
It's so true.
It was going to rain at 3 o'clock and started raining at 3:01. That's incredible.
I agree. It reminds me, you know this about me, I think, Bill, but I'm a fanatical gamer and I have a lot of, I'm sitting in a room right now with hundreds of tabletop board games around me, and that's why I love working in this room. And I surround myself with games. And what I've noticed is if there's a bad shuffle of a deck of cards, you get a comment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who shuffled? Yeah. And it's me, usually. I shuffled. They never say anything the other 99 times out of 100. Like,
oh,
great shuffle.
Shuffle, never.
Great shuffle. What a shuffler you are.
Right. Refs in a football game.
It's not fair. Meteorologists.
Screw up.
Card shufflers. Refs in a football game. Speaking of which, let's go next. Buy, sell, or hold, Bill. Football. American football. Buy, sell, or hold.
Buy with a caveat.
Do say.
My caveat, and there's starting to be, there is literature on this now, breaking news. I think that allowing gambling deep into professional sports, including minor league baseball, could have some very negative ramifications. And we're already starting to see some of that. The law is a little fuzzy. Like, what is insider trading and gambling? If I move in on the clubhouse attendant, and he tells me that the guy did a little extra rehab yesterday, and I'm not sure he's going to start on Tuesday night, and I can bet on the other team. And I think they may be asking for more trouble than the upside is worth.
You know, it was always an industry, even though it wasn't legal. And I always personally thought it should be legal. I've placed bets on sports games just with friends since I was a kid, and I think it's great to speculate. It's not that different from thinking about the stock market and buying a stock and trying to see the future, except there is a very important difference. And that is, well, there are several, but one of the ones, but the one I want to focus on is that sports betting is zero sum. Someone's going to win and the other guy loses and the house gets its cut.
Always wins.
And so the expected return is and always will be negative.
Exactly.
When you bet on sports. And I know I do it some myself just purely for fun. I would never stake anything meaningful. The stock market has a tailwind of 8 to 10% plus annualized. It makes absolutely no sense for Americans. And not just sports, but let's just go to casinos. I've never recommended, the one industry I've never recommended a stock in or from is the so-called gaming industry. Even though I'm a gamer myself, I mean the gambling industry, what it calls itself. It calls itself the gaming industry. I don't want to recommend businesses that basically just make money by taking your money.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to think that $66.5 billion, I saw this headline the other day, Bill, was lost by Americans to casinos last year.
Yeah.
$66.5 billion. I mean, these are businesses, if you really think about it, they're making it fun and attractive and they give you free stuff and they're welcoming you into their house literally to take your money.
Yeah, you know, slot machines. I know a guy who used to work in for a company that made slot machines, and different states, as I recall the story, have different margins essentially that the house can take
payouts.
Dial on the slot machine, 3%. Up, dialed down to 2% because we're in this state. Dial up to 4, and they are guaranteed that margin. What a business! But yeah, you're signing up to lose when you do it. So I have concerns about that. Somehow that we don't talk about concussions that much anymore about football, but that's one too, I think, is a long-term challenge for that sport.
An extra minute for football fans. Many listening are not, but did you see how they've changed the kickoff for next year?
I read something about it and I didn't. I have to see it. I don't understand it.
It's going
to
be weird for anybody like you and me, somewhere around the age of 60 who's watched football all their life. This is a totally different ball game with the new
kickoff.
They don't
run it far before they collide.
Right.
That's the idea?
Yeah, because they're trying. The worst injuries happen at high speeds with people running long distances and ramming into each other. So it's going to be different. Check it.
We'll see.
All right, one more for you, Bill. Buy, sell, or hold the phrase, we are so divided as a nation today.
Sell, sell, sell.
But hold on, it's so popular. Again, if this were stock, Bill, I mean, you're making money, right? This is everyone saying this.
We have never been more divided as a country. How about the Civil War when we killed each other by the tens of thousands?
Yeah.
You have to be kidding me. When the caning of Sumner, my favorite story, when a guy in the House of Representatives was caned by a Southerner, this guy was anti-slavery, and this guy came in and caned him, almost killed him.
Ugh.
And not only wasn't he censured, he was celebrated by his fellow pro-slavery. I mean, listen, I am very worried about this upcoming election and how what the aftermath might be. January 6th, for me as America, was a very sad day watching what happened. But we have been so much more divided in the past. It's not even close. And so I just, let's sell that. Let's bury that. And let's start saying, you know, this is when the pendulum turns. We're coming back together. And let's get our act together and reclaim this country.
Thank you for that, Bill Burke. Jonathan Haidt wrote a book called The Coddling of the American Mind. Yeah. Sometimes I think we coddle ourselves. I mean, that was more about how we're raising our kids and what universities are doing, a really important subject today. But I mean, a lot of us are just, it's the story we tell ourselves in our heads.
There is no context. It's like, really?
So but here's my question then. Let's just go one step deeper on this, Bill, because I'm actually troubled by this. So, and I'm an optimist.
Yes.
And I don't let things trouble me, but I am troubled by this. It is so common these days. I mean, I go to church on Sundays. We pray for this.
Yes.
It is so common to say we are so divided as a nation. How do we pull ourselves back out of, like, how do you turn the tide of people saying that? Because the more people say it, the more other people think, well, that's obviously the case. This is kind of like, I'm happy, but no one else is happy, clearly.
I interviewed a guy, Dan Riker. He works for Stanford University on climate change, and he's started this program called Uncommon Dialogues, where they get people together around a table who are diametrically opposed on an issue. So he's dealing with the environment. And so you've got environmentalists, you've got people who want green energy, and then you've got the fossil fuel people. I'm making this up, but that's roughly the idea.
Love it.
And when I get around a table, the exercise is, let's start listing all the things we agree on. And you start making that list, and it's really long. And by the time you get to the stuff you don't agree on, it's not that long a list. These are important issues, but everything changes when you start. So you get someone who's going to vote for this candidate for president and this person to vote for this. Okay, do you care about the future of your children? Do you want your kids to be healthy? Do you want them to have good schools? You go through this list and it's long.
Yeah,
you might fight over how do you fund good schools? You know, is our charter schools good? We believe so many of the same things. You get in these fringe issues. And unfortunately, think about the debates, these fringe issues of what bathrooms are kids going to use in schools? And, you know, okay, maybe those are important issues, but are they the biggest issues of the day?
They're not.
I think that sort of establishing this huge amount of common ground before we home in on the differences, I think that would go a really long way.
Thank you, Bill Burke. Any final thoughts? Do you have a key takeaway for your fellow rule breakers that you're joining in with this week? What do we want to be left with? Do you have a call to action?
My call to action, I would say, comes from Chris Anderson, who was a curator of TED for many years, the TED Talks organization. He's got a book called Infectious Generosity. I highly recommend it. And what he said to me is like, Bill, I am a technophile. I love technology. I love the internet. And it breaks my heart to see how we brought it down to this place. It's time for us to reclaim the internet. Let's reclaim it for goodness. Let's spread generosity. Let's not spread division. Let's bring our each other together. And it's a great call. And I said to him offline afterwards, I said, boy, Chris, I'd love to work with you on this. Maybe the Optimism Institute could be the Optimism Alliance and I'll help pull you together. And he's British and very smart. And he said, I don't hate that idea. So I think there's a possibility that we might get together on this, but that would be it. Let's reclaim the internet. Let's stop being passive about this and thinking, woe is me, and these evil social media companies are destroying my life. Let's lean forward, take some action, and reclaim the internet for good.
I love it. Bill Burke, thank you so much for joining with us for Rule Breaker Investing this week. His podcast is the Blue Sky Podcast. I mentioned that line that he leads off with earlier, but I'll say it again. There's always blue sky. Actually, would you say it, Bill?
Sure.
It's your lines.
Let's remember that there is always blue sky above. Sometimes you just have to get your head above the clouds to see it.
You can hear Bill every week on his Blue Sky podcast. I am inspired to help reclaim the internet. I think, in a sense, Bill, you won the internet on this hour of this podcast this week. Keep up the great work. Thank you, friend.
Same to you, David. Thanks so much.
As always, people on this program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and The Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. Learn more about Rule Breaker Investing at rbi.fool.com.